This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut. Each week, we are joined by a different expert or experts from the Yale Cancer Center, and together we'll discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to people with cancer, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help by sharing information with you. We also would like to give you hope in fighting cancer. We'll answer your questions and give you the latest information that's available. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu. You can also call, by the way, if you want to write it down, 1-888-234-4YCC. And we'd like to we'll either answer your questions today or in a future broadcast. If you are interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now posted in audio and written format on the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org. Well, today our program focuses on early-stage prostate cancer. My co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, is giving a lecture today, but I am very pleased to be joined by Dr. John Kohlberg, who's an associate professor of surgery and the director of urologic oncology, and Dr. Richard Peschel, who's a professor of therapeutic radiology and the director of the Lawrence Memorial Community Cancer Center in New London. Both Dr. Kohlberg and Dr. Peschel are experts in the treatment of prostate cancer at the Yale Cancer Center. John, Richard, thank you so much for joining us today on Healthline.
It's good to be here.
Yes, thank you. Well, let's start up by asking for the listening audience, what is prostate cancer, and also along those lines, how common is prostate cancer?
Well, I think prostate cancer is like any type of cancer. It involves or it originates from the prostate cancer. Most prostate cancers are what we classify as adenocarcinomas. It's a very common disease in males. This year, over 230,000 men will get prostate cancer with about 30,000 deaths. So it's a very common thing we see in urology.
And what population of men are at the highest risk of developing prostate cancer?
I think there are essentially three risk factors you look at when you talk about prostate cancer. Age, meaning the older you are, the greater chance you will develop prostate cancer. Secondly, family history. Genetics, did your father, brothers, uncles have prostate cancer? And finally, racial factors. We know that African Americans have a much higher incidence of prostate cancer.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to know that the youngest patient that had surgery for prostate cancer here at Yale is 39, and the average age is 58 for patients having surgery. So there are a fair number of young men that have prostate cancer. For radiation therapy, the average age is 68, so those patients, our patients tend to be a little older and have more comorbid or other types of medical problems that are treated.
All right, so is it fair to say that it is, essentially that it's a myth that prostate cancer only affects older men?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a very large population of men in their 40s and early 50s that have prostate cancer that need treatment.
People have looked at autopsy series and looking at young men who died of other illnesses or other trauma primarily, and they've found changes of prostate cancer in the 30s on a not uncommon basis.
Well, men sometimes might think to themselves, if I don't have any symptoms, I couldn't have prostate cancer, or vice versa. I would know if I had prostate cancer because I'd have a symptom. Now, do you normally find prostate cancer after a symptom develops, or how do you make the diagnosis?
I think that most men we see nowadays with prostate cancer, now that wasn't true 15 or 20 or 30 years ago, but nowadays with the blood tests we use, the the PSA, a prostate-specific antigen. Most of the men that come in to see us are diagnosed who are basically without symptoms at all. As the man gets older, over age 50, they may have symptoms of an enlarged prostate gland, but that doesn't always mean they have prostate cancer.
I think the thing that's very important for the public to know is because of public awareness and PSA screening, the average patient that's diagnosed with prostate cancer has disease confined to the prostate and hasn't spread anywhere, mm-hmm. over 80% in fact. So they tend never to have any symptoms at all, and it's just the PSA which causes their doctor to send them to a urologist. 10 years ago, more than 50% of our patients had advanced disease spread somewhere, so they tended to have many more symptoms than today's population.
What symptoms should prompt a man to go see his doctor and perhaps be seen by a urologist?
Well, I think that symptoms like blood in the urine, now that's not directly related to prostate cancer, but in general terms, if a man's having trouble with urination, slow stream, hesitancy, getting up at night, frequent urination, and if they have blood in the urine or pain, those are probably symptoms of that probably should be evaluated in urology. But that doesn't mean they have prostate cancer. It just means that they may need to be evaluated for other problems with the prostate.
Well, you know, I think that's an important point because sometimes people are afraid of going to the doctor because of what they might hear, but they certainly may, with those symptoms, it may be a benign problem.
Exactly.
And I guess the important thing is to go and be tested. Along those lines, what would you recommend, and Richard, John, for men at various ages, when should men start getting screened for prostate cancer, and what kind of screening would you recommend?
Well, if you look at the American Cancer Society, and this has changed over several years, that certainly at the age 50 and older, men should be offered the PSA blood sample and a digital rectal examination. That does mean offering, meaning that you should describe and discuss what screening may entail, which may entail a biopsy, which may entail some type of management of if they develop prostate cancer. If you have a significant family history, or you're African American, that screening should probably be done age 40 to 45. That's the recommendations of American Cancer Society.
Okay. Let me talk about treatment a little bit. Some of the myths have to do with side effects of treatment in general. And later on, we're going to get into more specifics. But men may be very concerned that if they're treated for prostate cancer, that they will they'll develop problems with impotency. And you know, is that always the case? Is that a myth?
Yeah, in today's world, if you look at the long-term complications that affect quality of life, particularly, let's just say, with radiation therapy and its modern techniques, the only significant long-term complication that affects quality of life is loss of potency. And it varies depending on the treatment, but it can be 30 to 50%. So it is an important long-term quality of life issue that men have to consider very seriously when they're trying to decide between different types of treatments. So it's an important long-term effect.
I might add, with surgery, you not only worry about impotency, but also the inability to control your urine or incontinence, which doesn't happen in radiation therapy patients, but certainly can be a concern with surgery.
Well, I want to share an email that we received. This is from Joe, who lives in Cromwell. And it brings up a different issue. He says, I am 52 years old and was just diagnosed with prostate cancer. My PSA is 2, and the doctor says that the Gleason's grade is 6. Could I consider just watching it for now? So actually, I'm going to ask one of you first if you could tell us tell us a little bit about that PSA and a little bit about the Gleason's grade, and then let's talk about watchful waiting.
Well, the PSA of 2 and a Gleason grade of 6 are both very favorable characteristics. So this patient has a very early prostate cancer detected very early. The guidelines that we usually use are, do we expect the patient to live 10 years or more? So if you have a 75-year-old with heart disease, observation is a perfectly reasonable choice, same with renal failure, that sort of thing. In a 52-year-old who's healthy, it would not be standard of care to encourage observation. It would be standard of care to think much more about some type of treatment.
Right. So, and I have to, and I think for our listener who emailed, in a second part of our program, which is going to come up in a couple minutes, we'll actually talk about some of the options. But it sounds like in general, we might favor doing something.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a select group of patients you don't have to treat, and nobody's really knows exactly who that select patient is. I think with this gentleman, his age is a primary concern. Like Dick said, if he was 62, 72. And just because you watch it doesn't mean you're not ever going to treat it. I mean, there's several protocols people have looked at, and basically it gets renamed from watchful waiting to active surveillance so that they get serial or they get follow-up PSA levels. They get biopsies every year to 18 months so that along the way, if things change, you know, the treatment can be instituted at that time. Always the concern is the fact that, you know, things get out of, you know, spread before you're able to kind of intervene and treat. So it's a very tricky thing to determine who you should follow and who you shouldn't.
Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and please stay tuned to learn more information about the treatment of early stage prostate cancer with Dr. John Kohlberg and Dr. Richard Peschel from the Yale Cancer Center.
It's estimated that over 2 million men in the U.S. are currently living with prostate cancer. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Yet major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from the disease. New treatment options now provide hope for all men diagnosed with prostate cancer. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, prostate cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to experimental medicines, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studio with our guest, Dr. John Kohlberg and Dr. Richard Peschel, who are both experts in prostate cancer at the Yale Cancer Center. Well, let me. We started talking about treatment a little bit, and so let me ask you this. Many patients feel the urgent need to make decisions about their care. They're given the diagnosis, and there's a sense that, geez, I have to do something immediately. And along those lines, do men have time to research the diagnosis and get an opinion or get a second opinion?
I think it's essential that they take plenty of time to think what they want to do and get as many opinions, whether it's from radiation oncology, whether it's surgery, whether as long as it takes. I don't think there's very few cases that there's a real sense of urgency for beginning treatment.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think because the vast majority of patients have local disease that hasn't spread, they can take some time, talk to a few doctors, get a bunch of opinions, and then make a decision.
Well, you know, for our listeners, I'd like to spend a couple minutes talking about radiation and then talking about surgery and looking at some of the options are. Richard, can you tell us, I mean, people have heard the term seed implants, they've heard about radiation, they've heard of IMRT. What are all those things?
Well, the seed implant is a popular form of treatment for early disease. It's a nice alternative for patients who don't want surgery but who might be good surgical candidates. Simply put, it's just putting little tiny radioactive seeds, about 100 of them, permanently in the prostate. These seeds give off radiation, which are treating the tumor. The other form of treatment that's a little newer, but probably more exciting, is intensity modulated radiation therapy. It goes by the term IMRT. It's an unbelievable step forward in the treatment of prostate cancer. Our own data at Yale suggests we've reduced the complication rate by a factor of 10. So there are almost no rectal or bladder complications, which were very feared by patients in the past. So it's a terrific treatment, as is prostate implant.
Yeah, I think that the big difference is that, you know, brachytherapy is done essentially as an outpatient surgical procedure, one-shot deal. Patient comes in, the seeds are placed, as opposed to radiation therapy, IMRT, it's a longer process. It's a 7 or 8 week course.
Richard, let me ask you along those lines. If a man says, listen, I want to have radiation therapy, How do you make that determination whether it's better to do the IMRT or the seeds?
Well, for very early disease, I would say 5 to 10 years ago, we favored implant over the conventional external beam. We've really changed now, and we're emphasizing the IMRT, which is external beam radiation therapy, but a superbly directed type of treatment. And the reason for that is in the future, new programs, newer treatments, the IMRT is better potential to improve its results over the implant.
John, let me ask you this: the same thing in terms of surgery, because there's talk about traditional approach, laparoscopic, the robot. Can you tell us about surgical options?
I think that there are basically three approaches one can do for surgery. One is an open approach, meaning you make an incision, and there are two places you can make the incision. One's in the abdomen below the belly button, or one is below the scrotum. The first one's referred to as a retropubic approach. The other one is a perineal approach. Not many people do perineal approaches, but so there's the open approach. Then there's a purely laparoscopic approach whereby you make anywhere from 3 to 5 little holes in the lower part of the abdomen and do the operation through those. And the third one is one that's probably the most exciting, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later on, is a robotic approach, meaning a process where a Da Vinci robotic system is used to assist the surgeon in doing the operation, whereby the surgeon operates remotely away from the patient through a console or a little area where you can control two arms of the robot, and actually there's three arms of the robot, and a camera where you're actually able to, again, through about 5 to 6 small holes in the abdomen, do the same operation as you do open, but robotically, with much better visualization of the anatomy, meaning that it's done in three-dimensional imaging, so you can get much more defining and exact precision of where you're putting your sutures and where you're dissecting. And the theory is that, therefore, you'll have better not only potency rates but also continence rates. And thirdly, I think that the postoperative recovery is much shorter. A lot of these patients go home the next day. The Foley catheter that it places during the operation usually can come out in about a week. And most, if not all, men are back to working anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks after the procedure, versus an open prostatectomy. The catheter stays in for 2 weeks. The patient stays in the hospital usually 2 days, and it takes maybe a month to get back to work, full activities.
Well, and let's talk about hormonal therapy. Is hormonal therapy something that's given before treatment, after treatment, and how do you make those decisions?
For our patient population, all patients that have intermediate or more rapidly growing cancers are all treated with a combination of hormones plus radiation therapy. The hormones are a very important component of the treatment, and they actually improve survival with radiation compared to just radiation therapy alone. Only the earliest group, favorable group patients, do not receive hormones.
There's a lot of interesting options. There's surgery, there's radiation, there's hormonal therapy. How do you work as a multidisciplinary team, and how do the surgeons, the radiation oncologists, the medical oncologists coordinate?
Well, I think that any patient, you have a long discussion with them, and I would say that probably 2/3 or 3/4 of my patients visit Dr. Peschel or one of his staffs in radiation oncology. It's almost automatic that they come to see me, and I think vice versa. I think a lot of Dr. Peschel's patients who want to talk about surgery will come and see me, so that we have a nice approach to make sure that the patient has the avenue to investigate radiation therapy or surgery, and it's not difficult for them to do that.
As a team, we start with the premise that surgery is the premier treatment for young men. And Dr. Kohlberg is too modest to say, but his results on the university service are equal to the results at Johns Hopkins, which is one of the premier surgical centers. So we start with that premise that surgery is wonderful, and then we compare options for patients, give them alternatives, but we do expect the alternatives to produce results that are very similar to surgery.
Well, we'd like to remind you to please email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor's story. And please stay tuned to listen to learn more information about prostate cancer with Dr. John Kohlberg and Dr. Richard Peschel from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Fairfield.
During my annual physical last year, my GP found a swelling in my throat, which turned out to be thyroid cancer. I was 79 and thought my days might be numbered. I did some research on the internet and determined that the Yale Cancer Center was the best equipped to help me. Incredibly, I got an appointment with the chairman of surgery, Dr. Robert Udelsman. He patiently explained what would be involved to remove my thyroid gland and immediately made arrangements for my surgery. Thanks to the compassion and professionalism of his office staff at Yale, I wasn't worried about the operation. The procedure went perfectly, and my recovery was relatively quick and painless. I am now cancer-free, and I don't even have a scar to show it.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Well, welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here in the WTIC studios with our guests, Dr. John Kohlberg and Dr. Richard Peschel. We're talking about the latest advances in the treatment of prostate cancer. I'd like to, for our listening audience, I want to share a couple other emails that we received. This is from Susan, who lives in Vernon. And a question for Dr. Peschel. My husband has decided that he's going to be treated for prostate cancer with seed implants. Do I have to worry about my own health when he comes home?
No, in general, no. The only requirements that we have is if the couple are going to have intercourse, that the husband wear a condom for about 2 to 3 months. There's no harm to the wife at all, but it's just a precaution we recommend. Young children and potentially pregnant women should not sit on her husband's lap, which is not too restrictive. And those are the only precautions they have to take. But she's perfectly safe.
All right. And then let me ask another question that relates to surgery. This is from Chris, who lives in West Hartford. He says, I recently underwent surgery for prostate cancer. I'm not having problems with impotence now, but I'm wondering if that's likely to develop. So, John, what would you say?
Well, I think that's a good point because, you know, we have the discussion with the patient before surgery that it may take several months to reacquire the patient's erections. And so if he's getting them this soon after the operation, he should do very nicely. But again, it can take anywhere from 6 to 12 months to reacquire the erection, sometimes even 18 months. We oftentimes use Viagra or a similar product immediately postoperatively to stimulate erections early on.
What are some of the questions that people ask you, a couple ask you, or a man with prostate cancer may ask when they're trying to make these decisions between surgery, radiation, active surveillance?
Well, I think that they want to know the quality of life. I think initially the overwhelming thing is they want the best treatment that's going to cure their cancer. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it's especially when we talk about surgery, the men don't want to be incontinent or have to wear diapers. And I think thirdly, although not always, but thirdly, it's erectile dysfunction or the loss of that. So I think that's what most patients initially come in. They say, listen, I want to be cured of my cancer. What's going to do that? And then the byproduct of that is the potential complications and side effects.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the biggest dilemma as clinicians that we face is most patients have been on the internet mm-hmm. without any editing, and they're so confused about what they should be doing. And a lot of it is from the internet. It really makes our job more difficult.
So on one hand, people are getting a lot of information, which some of which may be useful, but it also gets confusing.
Yeah, I kind of classify it as disinformation, if you will. I mean, it's some of the information is great. It's very, very good and very reliable, but some of it is very anecdotal and I don't think very helpful and more confusing than not.
Yeah, an example, there's a hospital in Wheeling, West Virginia that says their cure rates for prostate cancer are 95%. Well, their white population is 95%. In the city of New Haven, our white population is 45%. So those demographics mean everything.
Sure.
And that success rate can't be translated to other cities, other institutions. And that's the kind of information they get, and they think that's true.
So in many ways, I mean, that's the disinformation.
Right.
That's a little bit confusing. So I'm going to ask a question that may be a difficult one, and it may be confusing, but I think you can clarify it. What in general is the cure rate for men with early stage prostate cancer? Let's say just found with a PSA where you're not feeling a nodule on the prostate.
Most favorable group, 93%. Mm-hmm. That's with surgery, implant, or IMRT.
Right.
More intermediate groups where they may have a higher Gleason score, 70%. And for the poorest group with very aggressive cancers, about 50%. So we have a lot of work to do in that last group.
Yep.
And remember, that data is you know, people aren't dead of the disease. They have evidence of disease that far out. So that just because you have a PSA recurrence doesn't mean you're dead. It means that you've had a recurrence of disease and they have to be treated different ways, whether that's chemotherapy, hormonal therapy, et cetera. So that if you look at a lot of data, for surgery data, for example, once you develop a PSA recurrence, it may take 8-9 years to develop bone metastasis. It may take another 2 or 3 years to actually die of the disease. So even though you recur after surgery, it may take 10, 12, 13 years to actually die of the disease.
Right. I mean, which I think in many ways is encouraging, because in a sense, cancer has become more of a chronic disease for many people, whereas we were not that successful before. Let me ask you, for the men who are in that high-risk group that you're referring to, Richard, I mean, there's men with early-stage disease that are cured, 93%, and then we've got these very high-risk men. What do either one of you see as sort of some exciting things that are happening, both here at Yale and elsewhere, to try to improve the prognosis for them?
Well, I think the most exciting thing here at Yale was to get Kevin Kelly to come from Sloan Kettering and join our cancer staff. He has many new protocols, many new ideas in terms of identifying this group of patients and treating them. So for us, that's a big step forward to have Kevin on our team.
And I think that we approach it in kind of a multimodality approach, that these men, you know, we've operated on these men, we've rated these men, and they still uniformly do fairly poorly, that we have to try different route, not unlike breast or colon, that where they get a combination of chemotherapy or hormonal therapy plus surgery plus radiation therapy, so that we approach them in a multimodality type fashion.
You know, people that are not in medicine sometimes picture, you know, you've got the urology department here and you've got surgery, you've got radiation here and you've got medicine here. I think it's worth sharing a little bit of how you all get together once a week or every 2 weeks. What's that like?
We have a tumor board that we run, and that's that's every other Monday for an hour, and we all have interesting cases that we bring and we discuss, and that's an avenue to not only discuss the patients but also to kind of interact amongst ourselves about new patients that need to be seen or evaluated.
Just in addition to that, one time each month we meet and discuss the research programs that are going on, and so we kind of discuss the clinical part and then research part.
So, any clinical trials at Yale that you want to share with the listening audience?
Well, I mean, most of the clinical trials are run through the Cancer Center and Dr. Kelly, and he has several new trials looking primarily at advanced or metastatic disease, or what we call hormone refractory prostate cancer, and that's where most of the clinical trials are right now as far as in prostate cancer.
Actually, I want to share with the listening audience, if you're interested in learning more about clinical trials, you can find out more by looking at the website, which is yalecancercenter.org. Well, we're going to wrap up in just about a minute, and with that in mind, I wanted to ask our guests, Dr. John Kohlberg and Dr. Richard Peschel from the Yale Cancer Center, what are the two or three key messages that you'd like our listeners to remember?
Number one, prostate cancer is being diagnosed at an earlier stage, so the success rates are going to be higher. And number two, for radiation therapy, higher cure rates with much less morbidity.
And I think that for us in the urological surgical part of it is that when we've just acquired a new robotic Da Vinci system, and that I think that's going to be very exciting for our patients to have that opportunity to have that operation, because I think it'll hopefully have better outcomes and with less complications and less morbidity from the procedure.
Well, absolutely. It's been very exciting actually hearing about the new techniques in surgery, the new options in radiation, and really, thankfully, the rising cure rates for this disease, along with early detection. I'd like to thank Dr. John Kohlberg and Dr. Richard Peschel from the Yale Cancer Center for joining us on Healthline. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will focus on special concerns and needs of caregivers with our guests, Dr. Ruth McCorkle and Bonnie Indeck from Yale. And until then, this is Dr. Ken Miller from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.